Thank you for joining today's call with National Advocates and Legal Experts opposed to Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. Today you'll hear about the stakes of this nomination for immigrants' rights from leaders of National Immigration Law Center, Mi Familia Vota, Muslim Advocates, Japanese American Citizens League, United We Dream, and Alliance for Justice President Nan Aaron. There will be an opportunity for questions at the end. You can register to ask a question at any time by pressing star and one on your touchtone keypad. Please welcome Nan Aaron to begin.
Thank you, and hello, everyone, and thank you for joining our call today to raise the alarm about the very serious risks Brett Kavanaugh would pose for immigrants' rights. I'm Nan Aaron, president of Alliance for Justice. AFJ is a national association of 130 organizations representing a broad array of groups committed to progressive values and the creation of an equitable, just, and free society. I am so pleased and honored to be joined by some very distinguished guests. Today, we have David Inoue, the executive director of the Japanese American Citizens League, Ben Monteroso, executive director of Mi Familia Vota, Tom Jawitz, vice president of immigration policy for the Center for American Progress, Sana Abrar, advocacy director of United We Dream, Jonathan Smith, legal director for Muslim Advocates, and Joshua Rosenthal, staff attorney at the National Immigration Law Center. What an impressive lineup. I'm looking forward to hearing the comments of these wonderful advocates and legal experts. They and their constituencies are already living every day with the reality that the Trump administration is hostile to immigration and to immigrants and is taking cruel and unconscionable actions to harm these communities. The Muslim ban was one of the first. But of course, it didn't stop there. And in recent months, we have seen this administration literally ripping children from their parents' arms in an effort to deter immigration at our southern border. Some of these family members may never see each other again. And this nightmare scenario is being created by a president who now wants to install an anti-immigrant justice on the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. We've already seen how the addition of Neil Gorsuch to the court contributed to a terrible ruling on the Muslim ban. In the next year, the Supreme Court will hear cases on immigrant detention. It could decide the future of Dreamers and of Trump's family's separation policy. Brett Kavanaugh's record on immigrant rights is already well known because he's ruled against equal protections for immigrants as a judge on the D.C. Circuit. We have no doubt that if he were confirmed to the Supreme Court, this country, where immigration has been such a rich part of our heritage, would become a different place. It would become a place where immigrants and their families fear every day for their future, their jobs, their health, and lives. At AFJ, we don't want that kind of future, and our guests today are fighting to prevent it. So I'd like to turn this over to Joshua Rosenthal, staff lawyer at National Immigration Law Center, an organization front and center in this fight.
Thank you so much, Nan. As she mentioned, my name is Joshua Rosenthal. I'm a staff attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, which is the leading organization dedicated to fighting on behalf of low-income immigrants and their families and communities. And Nan really articulated the stakes that we're looking at in the coming years. The Supreme Court is going to hear a case on immigration detention in the very first month, and we think it's entirely likely that important immigration policies like family separation, what rights those families have, as well as the future of DACA, the survival of the Affordable Care Act, all of those issues will be before the court in the coming year and future years. And so I'd like to highlight a couple of examples of Brett Kavanaugh's history on the bench on the D.C. Circuit that illustrate the ways that he has departed from precedent to argue that undocumented immigrants are unprotected by federal law, including the most fundamental constitutional rights. So the first case that I want to point to that I think illustrates this is the agriprocessors versus NLRB case. That's a case in which a group of workers joined together to form a union in a Brooklyn meat processing plant. And although those workers had been at the plant for years, once they came together to join a union, that's when the employer decided to start checking social security numbers, discovered that some of the workers were undocumented, and insisted that it didn't need to recognize the union because of those workers' immigration status. The National Labor Relations Board rejected that argument. The district court rejected that argument. The D.C. Circuit rejected that argument. But the one person who accepted the employer's argument was Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh insisted that because those workers were working without authorization, that they shouldn't be entitled to the protections of the National Labor Relations Act. And one thing that I think is really important to note in that decision is it was a three-judge panel. One of the other judges actually wrote a separate opinion saying, I wish I could agree with Judge Kavanaugh. I think that this is, on a policy basis, she agreed with where he came out, but she noted that the law simply didn't say that. That wasn't the way that the law had been established by the Supreme Court, and yet Brett Kavanaugh would have departed from that established precedent and would have deprived those workers of their rights under labor law. So that's the first example. The second example that I'd like to briefly touch on is the Garza versus Hargan case, the Jane Doe case that I'm sure many of you have heard about, and I think our allies in the reproductive rights community have highlighted the ways that that reflects a troubling pattern of Justice Kavanaugh's belief on the right to choose. But I think it also shows a really troubling approach to the rights of undocumented immigrants and of migrants in detention, because that opinion, again, Judge Kavanaugh dissented from his colleagues on the D.C. Circuit to say that this woman, this young woman who was a minor who had already gotten judicial bypass from the state of Texas, recognizing her ability to make decisions, should not even be let out of immigration detention if that could potentially lead to her obtaining an abortion. And in that analysis, he would not acknowledge that undocumented immigrants have the full protection of rights under the Due Process Clause. He didn't embrace that, and nor did he fully value the rights that he assumed she had for the purposes of the case as representing a stronger interest than the interest of the government in its process of detaining her. And I think that raises a really troubling indication in this era where we're seeing immigrants being severely mistreated in the context of immigration detention, most notably with the separation of families that we've seen on the southern border. And so with that, I'll be happy to answer questions later in the call, but I look forward to hearing from some of my other colleagues. And Nan, I'm not sure if you want to introduce the next speaker.
Yes, thank you very much, Joshua. And now we're going to hear from David Inouye. David, take it away.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Nan. First, I'm the executive director of the Japanese American Citizens League. We are the nation's oldest and largest Asian American civil rights organization. We primarily focus on education surrounding the Japanese American incarceration experience during World War II and other historic forms of discrimination against Japanese and Japanese American community. And we use that to speak out on current abridgments of civil rights, not only for Japanese Americans, but all groups that might be targeted with the loss of their rights. What we find most troubling about this confirmation right now is this effort to speed the process and prevent a full vetting of Judge Kavanaugh's record. The National Archives have indicated they can't even provide the it's not even a full records request, a limited records request until October, long after these hearings are scheduled. And I'd like to put this in historical context. JCL and the Japanese American community just last week celebrated the 30th anniversary of redress, or the government's formal apology for the mass incarceration of Japanese Americans. And one of the key factors in achieving that redress was the discovery in the National Archives nearly 40 years after the war. There were documents that had been hidden by the government that revealed racism to be the root reason for incarceration and that there was no security threat. This is why this discovery process is such an important part of this confirmation process. And it must be a complete and full discovery, not just cherry-picked documents that the administration and Senate leadership want to see. The rush to incarcerate Japanese Americans at the beginning of World War II was a failure in the vetting process of Congress and the judiciary review responsibilities of the Supreme Court. And the result was one of the worst civil rights violations in the history of this country. We can't allow a similarly rushed confirmation process potentially result in a mistaken lifetime appointment to the highest court in this country. I'd like to continue my little history lesson to provide some more concerns of where we particularly think Judge Kavanaugh should be expected to respond in full with regard to current immigrant issues in the context of the Japanese and Japanese-American experience. Asian Americans immigrating in the late 1800s and the first half of the 20th century faced significant discrimination, particularly in the laws which determined who could immigrate, who could own land, and who could naturalize as a citizen. It's well known that it was the Wong Kim Ark case that went to the Supreme Court and established birthright citizenship. We now have an administration that is seeking to take away citizenship from those who are naturalized. And at what point does a right cease to be a right? And we've seen this with Judge Kavanaugh, where he has taken away the rights of people who are deserving of those. What are the limits on the executive branch to remove these fundamental rights, such as the existence of citizenship? Judge Kavanaugh has expressed in past ruling, as mentioned previously, that legal rights do not always apply equally to immigrants, particularly a woman's right to choose. Given the Asian American community's historic denial of rights that are so fundamental to mere existence, this denial of fundamental right of a woman's right to choose is similarly egregious. It is the court's responsibility to uphold the rights of individuals in the face of a government that might seek to take them away. Perhaps the most egregious attack on immigration where the court has played a role is the most recent case in the Muslim ban. In the majority's decision, Chief Justice Roberts went out of his way to repudiate the Korematsu decision of nearly 75 years ago. He rightfully declared that Korematsu was based solely on racial discrimination, but failed to recognize the exact same racial discrimination that led to Japanese-American incarceration directly parallels the anti-Muslim animus that preceded the issuance of the Muslim ban. Justice Roberts' invocation of the term facially neutral in describing the Muslim ban was essentially the exact same logic applied to upholding President Roosevelt's Executive Order 9066, that the policy itself was not on the surface discriminatory, but in its application it clearly was. As noted early, further discovery 40 years later revealed the government itself knew that the policy was entirely based on racist animosity and there was no security threat. The result has been that families that were supposed to be unified remain separated and parents are not able to see their children. And this leads also to the policy of family separation. How do we treat the children and their families coming to this country? There can be no more fundamental right than that of a parent to care for their child. And is that a right that Judge Kavanaugh will support as a Supreme Court justice? JCL is always concerned when the threat of repeating the same mistakes that led to the egregious abridgment of our own civil rights as a community, both during World War II, but also the discrimination that led directly to that incarceration. And this recent Supreme Court majority decision that bent over backwards to renounce while reaffirming an equally discriminatory policy in its place. We cannot have a Supreme Court that enables discrimination against individuals because of their national origin or their citizenship status. The Senate must perform its due diligence and hold thorough and transparent hearings to ensure that we have a court that supports the rights of individuals and does not seek to remove rights, as we have seen done all too often in the past. A rushed hearing process will lead to mistakes with potentially monumental repercussions. We need to stop repeating history, and the Supreme Court must be a bulwark against repeating the mistakes of our past. Thank you, and with that, I'll pass the discussion back to you, Nan.
Thank you, David. And our next speaker is Sanai Abrar, Advocacy Director of United We Dream.
Thank you so much, Nan. Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Sana Abrar, and I serve as the Advocacy Director for United We Dream, the nation's largest immigrant youth-led network in the country. I thank my colleagues on this call and the millions of people who have made it clear that senators should vote no on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Kavanaugh has built up a career as a partisan operative whose actions have silenced and marginalized working people, people of color, and women. He has rejected the idea that a woman being held captive in an ICE detention camp had a right to an abortion. If Kavanaugh had his way, she would have been forced by the U.S. government to bear a child while being held in an ICE detention camp. Kavanaugh was in the minority then, but he could be a majority voice on the Supreme Court if senators wrongly vote to confirm him. And in a labor rights case, he called a union election, quote, tainted because undocumented workers had made their voices heard as union members. Already we have seen the dangers of views like his as court after court rejected Trump's racist and Islamophobic Muslim ban, only to see it affirmed by partisan judges at the top. Similarly, three federal courts have ruled that Trump's killing of DACA was wrong, but Trump and a handful of politicians are colluding to undermine that consistent justice. We cannot allow Kavanaugh to rubber stamp the scheme to send immigrant youth to the deportation force agents. As Trump and Jeff Sessions send toddlers to represent themselves in court, rip families apart, kill DACA and TPS protections, hold kids and families in cages, and build up the deportation force with unprecedented budgets and an unconscionable lack of morals, we need an independent judiciary more than ever. Elie Wiesel famously said that the Nazis came for one group after another while people did not speak out. Well, I am a Muslim woman of color, and on behalf of United We Dream and immigrant youth and their families across the country, I am sounding the alarm bells. Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions are coming after me, my family, and my friends right now, and we know they're just getting started. Immigrant youth fight so hard to stop the deportation force because we know that we are fighting for more than our own protection. We are fighting to save our democracy and the civil rights and liberties of all people. A vote for Kavanaugh is a vote for another Trump yes man who will rubber stamp his twisted worldview. For the sake of the civil rights and liberties of all people, senators must vote no on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. Thank you.
Thank you, Sana Abrar. That was great. And next, we are going to hear from Tom Jowitz, Vice President of Immigration Policy at Center for American Progress.
Thanks so much, Nan, and thanks everyone for joining. So several speakers before me have talked about two major cases that raise serious concerns about how Judge Kavanaugh would address the rights of undocumented immigrants if he were confirmed to the Supreme Court. In both cases, Agriprocessor and Garza, he badly misconstrued the law to essentially write undocumented immigrants out of the legal protections to which they're entitled. He's frequently described as a textualist, but in Agriprocessor, he ignored both the very clear language of the National Labor Relations Act. He didn't even bother to argue that his position was consistent with the statute, and a binding Supreme Court precedent on the very question before him in that case. He disregarded the law and turned judicial norms inside out to conclude that undocumented workers aren't entitled to basic labor protections under the NLRA. In Garza, Kavanaugh said not fewer than five times in just four pages that all of his analysis was based on the fact that the parties assumed that Jane Doe had a constitutional right to access an abortion. But he didn't say even a single time that Jane Doe is entitled to due process under the Fifth Amendment. And throughout the dissent, he pointed repeatedly to her status as an undocumented immigrant in government custody as informing his judgment that forcing her to wait even longer to exercise the constitutional right that he begrudgingly assumed she had posed no undue burden on her. But I want to focus on another case that I think is getting actually a lot less attention, maybe because it's one of the few cases in which he ruled against the company or because it's a pretty technical issue. In my view, Kavanaugh's dissent in Fogo de Chao v. DHS may be the most lawless of all. I mean, he actually literally conducts no legal analysis in the entire dissent. His dissent there provides a window into how he seems to think about immigrants and immigration generally, whether immigrants contribute to this country or take away jobs from Americans, whether the unique cultural backgrounds and lived experiences of immigrants have value, whether diversity is our strength, or whether it's overrated and we should instead focus on America first. Let's not forget that before his nomination, Breitbart pointed to this case in particular when they called him the America First SCOTUS choice. And the American Conservative reported last month that before his nomination, activists and conservative lawyers circulated a memo, again, pointing to this case as proof that when it comes to immigration and the Trump administration's agenda, Kavanaugh gets it. So the case involved an application by Fogo de Chao, the Brazilian churrascaria, to bring into the United States temporarily one of its Brazilian chefs. The chef would have entered on a visa for employees that have, under the statute, specialized knowledge. And after receiving several hundred similar visas in past years, the restaurant was denied a visa by the agency below. Long story short, the majority of judges on the panel painstakingly reviewed the law and the record in a lengthy opinion and concluded that the agency made some errors in its review of the case and needed to give the application a second look. They didn't command the outcome. They just said that based on the law and based on the record below, the agency should apply the tests that are applicable. Kavanaugh dissented, and it's clear that he viewed the case through one lens. American chefs can learn to cook steaks just as well as Brazilian chefs, and there's nothing of value that a Brazilian chef can bring to the restaurant that an American chef can't simply be trained to do. The problem is that while he constructed the case in his mind to simply be about grilling steaks, that's not what everyone else, including the restaurant, the agency below, or the other judges, thought the case was about. The record showed that Fogo de Chao employs many American chefs who work alongside Brazilian chefs, and the Brazilian chefs who grew up around and trained in authentic Brazilian churrascarias help their American counterparts excel at the job. The fact that Fogo commonly or even predominantly hires American chefs, and that was in the record, that fact should have given Kavanaugh pause about whether the restaurant really thinks Americans can't cook. But it didn't. Instead, he pointed to the fact that Fogo employs Americans as proof that Americans can cook. But that was never the question. I mean, the fact that Kavanaugh can write an absurd sentence in his opinion like this one, quote, the, quote, Americans can't learn to cook proposition is a factually unsupported stereotype, end quote, demonstrates just how nonsensical his position is. That's a stereotype? Really? Kavanaugh's also completely dismissive of the notion that the restaurant might want to offer more than just food, but actually a richer experience informed by the lived experiences of people who can share something unique to their culture. And while he says at the end of the opinion that the job of a judge is simply to, quote, apply the immigration statutes as written, the statute that he doesn't even cite in the case, something he clearly didn't do in the agroprocessor case, as I mentioned at the outset, he never bothers to explain why culturally acquired knowledge is necessarily and categorically any less specialized than any other kind of knowledge that's acquired. It's a very technical point in the law, but to me it reveals so much. In this country, we believe diversity is our strength. Immigrants enrich our communities and drive innovation in large part because they are full people who bring with them and share with us their whole selves. We value that. In many cases, that specialized, unique experience can teach us something if we're willing to learn it. But because Kavanaugh's Fogo de Chao decision is not grounded in law, it tells us very little about his judicial philosophy, if he has one, than it does, I think, about the nationalist impulses that he appears to have and that the anti-immigrant crowd that championed his nomination are counting on. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Ben Monteroso, Executive Director of Mi Familia Vota.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. Ben Monteroso, Executive Director of Mi Familia Vota. Mi Familia Vota is an organization that has been working for the rights of workers, the rights of immigrants, but most importantly, to build political power for our community to be able to be defended. When we have somebody like Mr. Kavanaugh being conservative for the Supreme Court, one of the places where often a lot of issues on immigration are being decided, we have seen that in many cases, such as DACA, DAPA, who the Supreme Court decided not to act and therefore abandoned to their fate to a bunch of immigrants, millions of immigrants who have work and have family in this country. when we see the Supreme Court having to have to make the decisions on workers' rights, and we have somebody like Kavanaugh coming in and not having any good record and making sure that all workers and all immigrants are being treated decently and respectfully, is something that for us is very concerned. But furthermore, as I said, Mi Familia Vota has been working for 20-some years to ensure that we're going to have more political empowerment of our community. And when we have somebody being conservative who disregards the ability of people to have their voices being heard, because their position, the position that he's been taking in the voting and voting rights for our community, given the opportunity to the reach to have more voice than our community, that I think it is something for us to be concerned. As an immigrant right organization, as a building right organization, we are very concerned that the Supreme Court will become just another arm of extremists and another opportunity to continue harming our community. We need to make sure that when we elect, when we appoint judges to the Supreme Court, are judges who are going to not only see the law as it is, but the law as it should be. We all know that the immigration laws are broken and they need to be fixed. And then for hopefully the Congress will, Senator will have the opportunity to ensure that whoever gets elected, appointed to this position is not just going to be a yes person for extremist, but somebody that can actually govern and help us with the laws as to be implemented in a proper way. Mi Familia Vota is very concerned because workers' rights, immigrant rights, and voting rights are on the line every single day, and we need judges who can actually govern with the values and principles of this country. Thank you.
And thank you, Ben. And our last speaker today is Jonathan Smith, Legal Director of Muslim Advocates.
Great. Thank you, Nan, and thank you, everyone, for joining the call. And as mentioned, I'm Jonathan Smith, the legal director at Muslim Advocates. We are a national civil rights organization that works to ensure that Americans of all faiths can live free from unlawful discrimination, harassment, and bigotry. As several of my colleagues have mentioned, just a few weeks ago, the Supreme Court issued its opinion in Hawaii versus Trump, a case that allowed President Trump to continue implementing his bigoted and unjust Muslim ban. And that decision, which was decided by a slim 5-4 majority vote on the Supreme Court, shows precisely what is at stake in this nomination and the impact that Judge Kavanaugh, if confirmed, could have not only on Muslim communities, but immigrant communities and communities of color more generally. As a lawyer and as a jurist, Judge Kavanaugh has shown repeated hostility towards the constitutional rights and other protections for immigrant communities. My colleagues on this call have spoken at length about a number of his decisions from his time on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. I won't repeat that here, but I did want to echo my support for all those concerns and also to highlight Judge Kavanaugh's time during the White House of the George W. Bush administration, which also I think speaks to what type of justice he might be on the Supreme Court. While Brett Kavanaugh served as Associate White House Counsel during the George W. Bush administration, he was directly involved in the development of President Bush's torture policies and the treatment of detainees. These Bush-era policies, both as they relate to torture and as they relate to detention, have raised a number of alarming legal, moral, and ethical questions. As a result of Brett Kavanaugh's role in the development and creation of those policies, we have deep concerns about how Brett Kavanaugh, if confirmed, might address similar issues if he were to be on the Supreme Court. And as was previously mentioned, a number of the documents and records about his time at the White House have not yet been made public, made available to the public, or to the Senate or to any of the fact finders that need to know this information to determine whether or not Brett Kavanaugh is in fact fit to be on the Supreme Court. And that's why it's incredibly important that there be full transparency about his record, not just as a judge, but also his record as a lawyer, because all of those issues speak to the type of justice he might be if confirmed to the Supreme Court. I would just close by echoing all the concerns and fears raised by my colleagues, and just to highlight that based on everything that we know, Brett Kavanaugh is not fit and not suited to be on the Supreme Court, and the Senate should reject his nomination.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, and thank you to all of our wonderful speakers. Now we'd like to open up the line for reporter questions. Please listen again to the instruction for asking your question.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we will pause a moment to compile the Q&A roster. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone. It appears there are no questions at this time. I'll turn the call back to you, Nan.
Thank you. Well, let me just close with a few words. One, big thanks to our speakers and the press on this call. Two, everyone who signed up for the call today will receive a link to the recording of the program. Please visit our website at afj.org to stay up to date on the Kavanaugh nomination. Please call our communications department if you have further questions, and please look at the websites of the groups whose representatives spoke today, and have a good rest of the day, and thank you all very much. Bye-bye.